Hey, Giannis, my new book, Pit to LAX, My Story-Worthy Life, is finally coming March 25th.
Yes, it is an actual book on physical paper.
And it's
true. All sorts of great stories about being a flight attendant, people dying on their flight. You went in the Peace Corps.
That's true. You survived cancer. Well, a lot of people who listen to the podcast know a lot of these stories, but now they're in one place. Pit to LAX, My Story-Worthy Life. I'm so excited about it. Getting a lot of great reviews, and people can pre-order it right now over at storyworthymedia.com or at storyworthypodcast.com as well.
This is Madison Perry. You're listening to Story-Worthy.
Welcome to the Story Worthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finn.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from Dallas, Texas, from the production company of Cheaters, the television show.
is that a reality show?
Excuse me, you've never watched Cheaters?
No, I don't think I have.
It's super reality.
tell me the premise.
Well, basically the premise is that the host is interviewing a woman, and usually, sometimes a man, and she goes, I think my man is, she's from Sweden usually, I think my man is cheating on me with my sister, and and they go and they have these infrared cameras and they see, and now we see that he's going into a bar with the sister and now he's in the car. And then they go up and they confront the guy and there's an ugly scene in the street.
That sounds so stupid because then they have to get everybody's signatures of approval to air this dirty laundry of them. You know what I mean?
And like yet Americans want to be on TV so badly.
That they don't care that it shows them in a horrible light.
Have you ever watched
their character and their reputation is
You probably never watched an episode of Cops, have you?
I haven't watched Cops.
I've been forced to watch, literally forced.
I mean, I know Cops from before, but it was like the 80s, right? You mean the Bad Boys?
Yeah, same show.
What you gonna do?
Still on.
Same show.
Those people are being like a guy in his underpants will be run out of his meth lab and be chased, and then they capture him, and the whole time his face is unblurred, and they're saying his name, which means that after they cuff him and they film him humiliating himself, he's in the back, and they go, a PA comes up, because could you sign this form? He go, am I going to be on TV? Okay. And that's, so America's
somebody
crazy.
Somebody puts a release in front of his face at some point, and he says, okay.
Yeah, he says, yes, I agree, my likeness can be on your show.
Well, I am very excited then to be here in Dallas, Texas at the headquarters of Cheaters, because, in fact, our story tonight is from storyteller and writer Madison Perry, and he brings forth the topic, Cheaters.
Yes, and we are curious as to, does it have anything to do with the show? Is it about a real life? Is it about people?
I think it's probably going to be about his real life. I mean, this is a true story podcast, Hannes. It better be about his real goddamn life.
Well, I mean, no, he could have something to do. Yes, well.
You don't look like the cheating kind, Hannes.
I've
known you for almost 20 years. You are not the cheating kind.
I'm not. I'm very boring, and I couldn't. I don't have.
That's not boring
at all. No, I don't have the wherewithal. Right.
Yeah.
But duplicity is not my strong suit.
Yeah. Well, I'm not at all a cheater myself in terms of I
can honestly
like
say that you have never cheated on anyone in this century.
No, but I mean, like, in terms of cheating and lying, it just builds upon itself.
Yeah, for long periods of time.
And it really
you
didn't
go out with multiple people at the same time, but you never told people the other person didn't exist.
Exactly. Like, when in college, I had a really bad period between the ages of, like,
well, a lot of girls have that. Oh,
17, and that's disgusting. Whatever. The point is, there was a period in my life where I didn't want to disappoint anybody. I didn't want to let them down. So I would see them. They would like me. And then I would say, yes, yes, yes.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because to say no would be to hurt their feelings. And God forbid I'd let anybody down.
How come every woman I met in college was fine with hurting my feelings?
I was a people pleaser, is what I was.
Yeah. Where were the people pleaser? Where was the woman
I wanted to tell you this one story. I thought I just, and I've actually cut it in half. So it's not a long story.
You've told a version of the story before.
Hang in there.
But
The full version of the story is available in my new book, Pit to LAX, My Storyworthy Life, as you know.
And it's very dirty, the way you've written it, with many dirty, disgusting details.
The title of the chapter is called Birth Control, and it's just a good thing I was on birth control. That's kind of the hindsight of this thing. Okay, let me just, I'm going to break it down for you. Here's what was happening. I was in college, I was 18 years old, and I was dating two guys at the same time. They were both named Bob. That was convenient. Sure. I was bobbing around, I had a Bob at the beach in Ocean City, New Jersey, where I spent my summers. And then I also had a Bob in college. He was with the fraternity I was a little sister to. They were called the Betas. They were the cool stoner fraternity, and I fit in quite well. All right, my sister is getting married in Pittsburgh, and I am the maid of honor, and I need a date. So do I take Beta Bob, who lives four stories above me in the same dorm?
Yes.
No. I decide instead to import Beach Bobby from New Jersey for the weekend. Now, are Beach Bobby and I going to stay at the wedding hotel for the weekend? No. We're going to stay in my dorm room to save money, four stories below Beta Bob, who I've brilliantly told that I'm busy all weekend helping my sister with the wedding. Ha, that'll work. I'm helping my sister with the wedding.
I didn't realize before how much weed was involved in these decisions.
What I didn't factor in was that Beta Bob was already suspicious that I hadn't invited him to the wedding. And Beta Bob also knew that I had had this summer romance with Beach Bobby. So when Beta Bob saw Beach Bobby walk into the lobby of our dorm room, of our dorm, with a big bunch of daisies, it was no bueno. Now, listen, the daisies are important because I love daisies, and all the Bobs knew this. In fact, they all brought me daisies. In fact, here's some advice, girls. If the guys like it when you tell them you like a cheap flower, plus you get more. So I'm in my dorm room on the ninth floor, and I'm waiting for the call from Beach Bobby to tell me that he's arrived for the weekend. And I'm just going to go down to the lobby and sign him in. And my phone rings, and I answer it confidently. Hi, Bob. I thought it was Beach Bobby downstairs, but it was not. It was Beta Bob, and sounding none too pleased and suspicious. He asked me if I had any friends coming into town. And of course I say, no, I don't know what you're talking about because I'm busy with my sister and the wedding. And then Beta Bob asks me to come up to his room to say goodbye for the weekend since he was not going to be seeing me. Of course I couldn't say no, and I headed for the elevator. So I take the elevator to the 15th floor, and as I approach room 1518, I hear Neil Young wafting down the hallway. Mm-hmm. Now, what you need to know here, folks, is that Neil Young was always my go-to sex music. Still is. When Beta Bob opens the door, he starts kissing me and hugging me, and he's asking for a massage. And you guys, you have to understand, Beta Bob was beautiful. I mean, think athlete, six-pack abs, and a huge cock. I mean, he was totally my type. And then he got me to have sex with him to prove that I was not doing exactly what I was doing. He tricked me. How dare he? And when we finished, I throw my clothes on and I rush for the elevator. I was 30 minutes late to meet Beach Bobby, who I knew must have been in the lobby by then. And when the elevator doors open, I see him standing there with a big bouquet of daisies. And 20 minutes later, Beach Bobby and I were in my dorm room. I popped in Heart of Gold into the cassette player, and now we're having sex. But here's what you have to understand, you guys. Beach Bobby was beautiful. Think surfer, six-pack abs, and a huge cock. It was totally my type. Then, all of a sudden, there was a knock at the door. Christy, you in there? It was Beta Bob. I froze. Beach Bobby froze. I thought, oh, my God, I am totally busted. But then the knocking stopped and he went away. And I told Beach Bobby it was just a friend who had been sick. And I really should go up and see him on another floor. You know, make sure he's okay. So I pull my clothes on, I leave the room, and I ran up the stairs to Beta Bob's room. I couldn't wait for the elevator. I could hear the Three's Company theme song in my head come and knock at my door. It was like a sitcom. And somehow, here's the important thing, somehow I convinced Beta Bob that what he thinks he heard, he didn't. I said I wasn't even in the room at the time he knocked. I was visiting a friend who was sick on another floor. Brilliant. I had so many sick friends in one day. And here's the thing, you guys. I got away with it. I was so good at cheating. It was like I was my dad.
Okay, first of all.
What?
You got away with it because these guys wanted to believe you.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's how this happens, is like people go, you're telling me a ridiculous story, but I don't want to deal with the reality of what I'm very sure is the reality. So I'm willing to, it's kind of like politics, actually. They'll tell you a story. You're willing to believe the story because it's too hard to deal with truth.
I see.
So I think that you didn't really fool him. He kind of fooled himself.
Yeah.
You enabled him to fool himself.
Well, what would happen with me when I was in college and playing all these tricks on different guys and cheating and all that? It was just, in the end, it was all down on me. Like, in the end, I was the asshole, and I just self-loathed myself and hated myself and felt guilty forever. Whereas they could say to themselves, well, she's a bitch, and walk away, and then they're
right.
done.
But you have no, don't you have the, even the, some, what, don't you think at least one of these guys was cheating on you?
Boy, I never thought of that, honest. I doubt it.
I knew that you were going to go, what do you mean? So you're saying a whole bunch of guys you were with. One of them had to be. First of all, they were young and stupid, and they had giant cocks and six-pack abs, apparently. That's all. It's just, all I see is a head and an ab and a cock and two legs. That's all I see with your boyfriend. Like, everything else is just gone. There's no chest. There's no arms. It's just all abs and cock, which, by the way, is the name of a really good bar in West Hollywood. But
cock and abs. It's English.
It's a version of tits and ass from Chorus Line. Thank you. People are getting, you know, podcasting gold. Yeah, is musical references from 1976.
Anyway, the point is,
I think these guys, some of these guys cheated on you as well. And
here's
it all came
I'm
out
saying,
in the wash.
Is,
and
it would be nice
okay,
if I
have
had
a question that may be over
the
line,
time.
And I don't believe I didn't ask this question last time you told this story. You're having sex with fourth floor Bob. Then you go 20 minutes later, you're having sex.
The 15th floor, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's the problem with the story. Yeah. Then you're having sex with the guy who came in from out of town. Is there any showering going on in between these two acts?
Did you hear any showering going on, Hannes?
So, all right. So
I was the real deal cheater. I wasn't like messing around cheating.
And you weren't. Neither one of these guys is wearing condoms.
Ladies and gentlemen.
No. You don't get to back out of this.
No,
out
I'm
of
just
this part
saying,
of the story.
We're talking about the 80s,
yeah.
And I was 19. I think I was 18.
And you were on birth control, as you said. Thank goodness.
Anyway, so Madison
and yet
Perry,
no diseases. That's
he's
amazing.
He's got a story about, that's a different podcast. It's called Diseases.
No, yeah, exactly.
Madison Berry's here, you guys, and he's got a story about cheating, and we're going to hear about that in 1 second. I did want to mention, folks, that if you want to support the Storyworthy podcast, that would be great. There's a couple ways you can do it. One is just by going to storyworthypodcast.com, and you'll see all sorts of things you can do there.
Right, you can click on our Amazon ad and shop for your, you know, like Christine's very dirty, dirty book. You can buy.
My book is not dirty, but it's a lot of fun. I do hope they pick it up.
Okay. You're going to need to dirty it up if you want some sales.
You can buy my book. There you go. You can also click on our Patreon ad. That's been going quite well recently,
yes,
and we appreciate it very much.
Should we mention? I'd like to read their names. Can I read their names?
Well, we did that on the last show.
Well, they want to hear their names again.
Okay, go ahead. Listen to some names.
Stu Gillickson. That's right, Stu. We have a guy named Stu helping us out. How many guys do you think named Stu have you ever had met besides
Disco
Stu? Can I
tell you, Stu Gillickson is such a great fan of our show. He tweets me, he Instagrams me, middle of the
night, middle of the day. He retweets.
He's a good man.
Thank you, Stu.
As
far
as
I can tell.
He's from Wisconsin.
So for the winter, he's in for 6 months. He's at the computer. He's got nowhere to go. He's snowed in.
All right, you guys, wherever you are, hang tight because Madison Perry is on his way here. Next time on Storyworthy, we have singer-songwriter Paige Bryant.
And I'll be talking about my family houseboating experience and how I survived.
That's next time on Storyworthy.
Hey, this is Kevin Allison of the Risk Podcast, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
And we're back. We have left the headquarters of Cheaters, and we're now at in Arlington, Texas, between Dallas and Fort Worth at the AT&T Stadium, home of the Dallas Cowboys, the biggest stadium in the world with the biggest television in the world, home of where the Packers won the Super Bowl about 3 years ago.
And how many does it hold?
Holds about 100,000 people.
That's not the biggest stadium, then. There's plenty of stadiums that hold
It's in America. It's in Texas. It's the biggest stadium in the world.
I just think you're wrong.
You think those Saudi Arabians? Oh, sure, they can build a bigger stadium.
There's college stadiums bigger than 100,000. I just know that.
Look.
All right, whatever, man. I'm just saying.
It's fine. It's the home of the biggest television in the world, and I know that's true.
All right, you guys, whatever. By the way, you know that show when the show Dallas was on? My father always saw things backwards. I think that's dyslexic now.
That is dyslexic. Yes.
But he always called that show Salad. And he called the Waltons Snotlaw.
Is this true?
What do you mean, is it true? Why would I make up that my father sees the Waltons?
Because you thought it was funny?
No.
You were wrong, by the way. But
all right, you guys, he's here right now, Madison Perry. He's a writer and a performer. And you know, Hannes, he has won the Moth Grand Slam two times.
Two times?
Two times.
He's a two-time sloth winner. The sloth, by the way, is an offshoot of the moth where you tell a story really slowly. It takes about 4 hours to get a sentence out. The sloth. Yes.
That's right. It's not a 5-minute limit. It's a 4-hour limit.
Yeah, exactly.
He also hosts the Los Angeles Moth Slam, and he's been doing that for 4 years, and he's been featured on the Moth Radio Hour. I've been on the Moth Radio Hour.
You have.
That. That's a lot of fun.
That's fun
they
to be on.
They sent you a very small check.
Really? How small was the check from NPR?
I remember getting a check that wasn't actually that small. I believe it was $120.
It's almost as much as we got paid to dub the porno at Larry Flint, but that's a tale for a different
All right,
episode.
Madison, he also has several film projects in development, and he has an essay published in the New York Times Modern Love column. He's currently working on his first book to be published by Scribner, and you can find more out about him at MadisonPerry.com and also follow him on Twitter at Madison Perry. All right, folks, wherever you are, put your hands together for Madison Perry.
Thank you. So this story takes place several years ago. I was living in New York City, and I was at a dinner celebrating my one-year anniversary with my girlfriend at the time. And the dinner was going a bit awkward because in our year together, neither of us had yet said, I love you. And that's a long time to go without saying, I love you. I'd noticed that we'd recently both been avoiding the word love in any context. We'd be like, oh, this turkey sandwich is great. I like it. I liked that sandwich. It's a very special sandwich to me. So you had to be careful because you don't want to rank a sandwich above your partner emotionally. So when we exchanged our cards at the anniversary dinner, they were really impersonal and dry because we couldn't use the L word. So they came out sounding kind of like we were writing in each other's yearbooks. It's been great getting to know you this year. Stay cool this summer. XOXO, your boyfriend. So it's one of those relationships that wasn't good, but it was good enough. We were both nice people. We didn't want to hurt each other, so we stayed together. And about a month after this anniversary dinner, my girlfriend was out of town, and I was at a bar, and I met this girl named Lindsay. And she was a friend of a friend. She was beautiful and very hip and cool, and we really hit it off. It was one of those times where you just instantly connect with someone. And we ended up talking for several hours. We stayed long after our friends had left. And we were sitting close together. Our knees were touching underneath the bar. And when I'd lean in to talk to her, I could smell her hair. And I don't know why, but other women's hair will always smell better than your girlfriend's hair. Science has not explained this, but it's true. And at some point late in the night, there was a pause in the conversation. And we were staring at each other. It was a super intense stare. And this was obviously the moment when we were supposed to kiss. And I wanted to kiss her. But my conscience said, no, you know, you can't. You've got a girlfriend, and you're a nice guy, and nice guys don't cheat. I said, yeah, you're probably right, conscience. Except don't they say the things you regret in life the most are the things you don't do? They say that, right? And nice, what does that even mean? Isn't embracing the moment more important than that? And my conscience says, those are some really good points. And so I kiss her. And she kisses me back, and our kiss becomes passionate, and we're making out right there at the bar, and we don't care who's watching, because we're young, and we're drunk, and it's 3 a.m. in New York City, and we're doing something wrong, and it's great, and this kiss is fantastic. This is the kind of kiss they write songs about, the kind of kiss men go to war over. This is it. We're doing it. So it was a good kiss. And she ended up coming home with me, where we kissed some more, and we actually didn't have sex, but it was a great night we had together. But now I'd cheated, and I'd never cheated before. And to defend myself, I do want to point out that this was a pretty mild form of cheating. On a scale from 1 to Arnold Schwarzenegger, this was like a 3 at most. And, you know, like what Lindsay and I did, it would be considered in many European countries a friendly hello. But we were in America, so it was cheating. And it turns out I'm really bad at cheating because I got caught within 24 hours, and here's how. I wrote an email to my best friend telling him what had happened. This was mistake number one. If you cheat, don't put the evidence in writing. If you really feel like you need to tell someone about the experience, call them. And even then, you should be using a burner cell phone, like you're a drug dealer on the wire. Mistake number two was the subject title I chose for this email, which was, and I quote, "So I cheated on my girlfriend." This was an inconvenient title when the response came in from my friend while my girlfriend was using my computer and saw the subject line, "RE, so I cheated on my girlfriend." So of course, we got into a fight. She says, "How could you do this to me? How could you sleep with someone else?" And I'm like, "Oh, I didn't. We didn't have sex. We just kissed." And I think this is a flawless defense. But she says, "That's worse. Kissing is worse than sex." Which, nope, no, that's not true. First, that's not true at all. That's like saying attempted murder is worse than actual murder. And second, it would have been nice to know that kissing was worse than sex when I was busy trying not to have sex with Lindsay. I was trying to make things better. Turns out it could have been a real win-win for everyone if I'd had sex. So eventually my girlfriend and I broke up, but crazily we did not that night. We talked all night, and I got her not to break up with me. And ironically, I think we ended up staying together longer than we would have because I had cheated. I just felt so guilty I stayed in the relationship for another few months, even though it clearly should have ended. Then by the time we broke up, Lindsay no longer lived in New York City, and so I'd missed my chance with her. And I actually really was sad about that because we had a really nice night together, not just physically, but we had a really nice connection. And so she became one of my what-if girls. And over the next few years, it wasn't like I was in love with her or constantly pining for her, but sometimes she'd pop into my head, and I'd think, what if? What if we'd had a chance to date properly? What if I'd broken up with my girlfriend and asked her out? And what if girls are really enticing? Because the answer to what if is never like, well, probably wouldn't have worked out. The answer in your head to what if is always, well, we would have fallen in love. It would have been a love for the ages. And we would have moved to Seattle and opened an artisan cheese shop together. That's always the answer to what if. So cut to 4 years later. I've moved from New York City to Los Angeles. I haven't talked to Lindsay at all or communicated anyway since that night. But then she shows up on Facebook one day in the people you might know section. And I might know her. I click on her. She lives in Los Angeles. I live in Los Angeles. I've had a couple girlfriends in the last few years, but I am now single. I friend her. She approves my friend request. I peruse her profile. She seems to be single. There are no boyfriend-looking types in any of the pictures. So we exchange a few messages, and she suggests we should get together to catch up. This is all happening. It was like a movie, one night of passion, and then years later, star-crossed lovers are brought back together by fate. Cupid, you son of a bitch, you've done it again. I was finally going to get an answer to what if, but I already knew the answer, eternal bliss. So I showed up at the place where we agreed to meet, and I spotted her at the bar, and she looked great. She was still beautiful, and she smiled and waved, and I walked over, and we hugged hello, and her hair still smelled incredible. And I couldn't believe it was happening. And then she introduced me to the girl standing next to her, who was her girlfriend. And not girlfriend like, "Hey, girlfriend, let's get brunch and talk about boys." But girlfriend like lesbian girlfriend. They were a pair of very beautiful young lesbians, dressed very hipply. It was like an American Apparel ad, basically, standing in front of me. So this takes me by surprise, because last time I saw Lindsay, I had some evidence that she was attracted to guys, mainly that she'd made out with me. And I do have very soft skin and listen to a lot of Katy Perry, but technically I am a man. So I was a little confused, and as the three of us were standing there, we were talking, I just kept thinking, like, what, was she a lesbian then? Was I the last guy she was ever with? Did I drive her to lesbianism? And I know you can't make someone gay, but gay plus people must have a tipping point where there is someone that makes them think, like, yeah, I'm gay. Like, what if I was that person? What if kissing me made her think, oh, men are not for me. This is horrible. This is disgusting. And of course, there was the other possibility that the experience had been so amazing. She'd declared, if I cannot have this man, I shall have no man. That one's probably a little less likely. And so Lindsay and I became friends. We were not destined to become lovers. The answer to what if was nothing would happen because she doesn't like penises anymore. And I was really disappointed for a while, like really sad and down about it. Like I'd been dumped and I didn't understand why I was taking it so hard because I didn't love Lindsay. I really didn't even know her. She was a girl I'd drunkenly made out with one time. But I finally realized that I was disappointed not because I'd lost the girl, but because I'd lost the great story. And sometimes that's the problem with being a writer and a storyteller. I'm always trying to fit my life into a narrative. But life usually doesn't conform to a three-act structure, and you don't always get to be the hero. So my drunken hookup with Lindsay wasn't the beginning of an epic love story. It was just me being an asshole cheater.
When you were with Lindsay the night you guys were in the bar together, and then she went home with you, how did the sex not happen?
I don't know. We just didn't have sex. Not all of us are, you know, running around from dorm room to dorm room like you.
Oh, Mr. Judgment over here.
Yeah, all of a sudden, here's
this
guy.
Okay, it's so I'm assuming that you were like, I'm doing this, but this is, I won't do any more. Yeah, you were doing that, right? And but she didn't push you.
Yeah, I think it was the kind of, we literally met each other a few hours earlier.
Yeah.
An exciting makeout session was enough.
Well, it was like it was like a Tinder. It was almost like Tinder, but then it stopped.
Was anyone pants invaded in this makeout session?
No.
See, that's the thing.
No pants were unzipped at all.
That's a PG makeout session right there. Because I'm just saying, I don't think that she necessarily didn't like the penis unless she literally, you know, was repulsed and wouldn't go there. You're not saying that that happened. It just ended.
I mean, she kept gagging throughout this.
Oh, you're such a kid.
No, I'm kidding.
Oh.
No, I think she's probably attracted to both men and women,
yeah,
but falls more on the woman's side.
But that's
ultimately
what my point was. Yeah. Is I know like three or four girls who were so-called lesbian, but now they're married or they're dating men. So it seems like
I call those girls greedy.
I find there's a more androgynous society going on.
Yeah, I think that was the case.
Because it seemed like why avoid 50% of the population? How could you just say 50% of the people in the world can't turn me on? That can't happen.
For me, it pretty much does.
Does it?
Guys are gross. I don't know.
Yeah, because men are so.
That's so. It's so funny. It's like, you know. I mean, I'm all liberal. You're all Hollywood. I'm sure we're all very liberal and supportive of gay
Hollywood.
Rights. Yeah, supportive of gay rights. But if you try and like, it's always funny when people are like, you know, gays are going to convert you. It's like, you couldn't talk me into sucking a dick. You couldn't talk me into it.
Wait
There's
a minute.
Nothing.
Brad Pitt.
No.
Okay. I'm just going to throw
just,
a few
I'm
names
out. I'm
just
saying, it's like
Jeff Bridges. As the dude.
Oh, as the dude.
See what I mean?
You know, your cock really pulls this room together.
That's what I'm saying.
You see what I did there? Yeah. I did a little Lebowski thing there. But it's like we
it
don't,
can't be done.
You're not getting it. It's like, I don't get it. Like, I'm thrilled that women want to have sex with men, but I don't understand how they want to.
I don't
get it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like,
well, and a couple of the guys we've had in here that are gay have said that about women. Like
right.
We were
no,
with Kevin
genetic.
Allison of Risk, and I was talking to Kevin about being with women, and he's like, and I said, so you've actually had sex with a woman? And he's like, oh, God, no.
Right. The know, idea.
Like I totally
right.
offended
the
him.
The exact opposite is like, it's like, hey, you have access to my vagina. Is like, I'm like, yay, awesome. And he's like, oh, gross. But that just proves
there's
it's
no
genetic.
Choices,
it's
right.
It's in your chemistry. It's in
I
your.
I think so.
So anyhow, so you're straight as an arrow. Is that right?
yes, I would say.
No, but so Madison, your girlfriend at the time, how did she find out that you guys had made out then? Or why did
she? She read the email I'd sent to my friend telling
right.
him
I'm
about
yeah.
our escapades.
Do you think you were trying to get caught?
Yeah, because you really should never put anything in print if you don't want it to be seen.
And certainly not the title
yeah.
of the email. Subject.
Yeah, I learned
I
a lot.
On my
what was the subject?
I cheated on my girlfriend.
Oh, my God.
That was the subject.
Madison.
Yeah.
You were trying to get out of it, I think.
I mean, I would like to defend myself, but like subconsciously I wanted to get caught. I think I was just dumb, though.
Yeah.
I was just dumb. I didn't
now,
know how
you've
to do
had,
it.
You seem to have had a lot of girlfriends. Am I wrong or right?
Yeah, I've had a lot of girlfriends.
And did you hear me talking earlier about how I didn't want to disappoint people? I felt bad. I didn't want to let them down. Did you ever have that with girls?
Yeah, I think a lot of times I stayed in relationships a lot longer because I didn't want to hurt anyone's feelings, which It's really a horrible, it's a much more hurtful thing to do than being honest with someone.
It's very selfish because you think you're doing them a favor and you're only doing yourself a favor.
When I got caught, I should have said, I'm sorry, this was wrong to do, but I did it because I was unhappy and we should break up. Mm-hmm. But instead I said, no, don't, I made a mistake, like, let's
Everybody does that. They backpedal, right?
Yeah, because you want a relationship to end, but if it ends because you cheated, you're now a bad person.
Right. And see, and you half cheated. Because you're right. You know, like you said, it would be nice to know that you found that, you know, it's like I could have just gone for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd still be bad. How much worse can I get?
Yeah.
So at least I could have, you know.
No, it's very true, Madison. And I've been married twice. And the first, I laugh. It's not funny. It's fucking depressing. And it's sad. And I'm a 50-year-old woman going around Hollywood, you know, with a wheel in the back of my car. But that's not the point. But my first husband, you know, got another girl pregnant and so obviously cheated. And then that ended horribly and I never saw him again. So it's like all this energy and time I had given him and he had given me. And of course we had some laughs and he wasn't a complete asshole or I wouldn't have married him.
Yeah.
But then that's gone and it's out the window.
Right.
Whereas my second husband, nobody cheated, nobody lied.
Yeah.
We split up, but we're totally friends.
That's nice.
It's better, right?
Yeah, it's much better to not cheat.
So what's your message to the children out there of America?
My message is if you're unhappy enough to cheat, you should probably just end the relationship before you do something that is more painful than a relationship.
Well, what
a
you
breakup
do is
will
you
be
raise
anyway.
Your hand like an adult and you say, you know I told you this, but I have changed my mind, and now I feel this.
Yeah,
adult.
But people can't
what are you
do
talking
that.
About?
No, I'm just saying people don't do that. They
no,
don't.
Nobody acts
they
like
can't
an
use
adult.
Their words and just say what's on their mind. They have to circumvent it, get caught, make it a mess, and then somehow that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like they're acting like children. It reminds me of that movie, Little Children, that Tom Perata book that got developed into that movie with Kate Winslet.
Okay, now don't yell at me. I never watched that movie.
Anyway, it's called Little Children. Movie. Right, and it's about these adults acting like children.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Love that movie.
Well, you it's were, I mean, not to disparage, but you did mention your dad earlier on. It's like, do you think that he, I mean, it would have just been better had he just broken up with your mom before.
Yeah, exactly. But back then it just didn't happen that way. You know, he slept with his tennis partner and then, you know, had an affair with her and then left my family.
But married her and it was married to her until his death.
Right.
So
my dad was a committer, I'll say that. Married to one woman for 27 years and one woman for 32 years.
Yeah, some guys just had to be, especially that generation, they just had to be married. It's like there's these, you know, like a friend of mine, her mother had passed away. This is several years ago. And within a year, the father was dating somebody else. And she's like, I can't believe it. I'm like, he was married for 40 years. He can't not be married. This guy can't not be married. He has no idea how to not be married.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, Madison. When you ran into her in the bar later on with her beautiful girlfriend, didn't you for a second think threesome? Or?
Oh, I spent most of the evening being like, Madison, settle down. You're not here for a threesome. That's
and
not why you're... No, no, I was not there.
How do you know
there.
You weren't
but
there for
did,
a threesome?
Did the subject
Well, here's the thing about lesbians is they're lesbians because they don't like having sex with men.
Well, but she made out with you.
That's true.
But did the subject of the fact that last time you saw her, you had made out with her even come up as a conversation? That would be an awkward conversation, but I could see it coming up.
We actually became friends and hung out a few times, and
well,
I asked her about that, and she said, yes. Attracted to men, and I've just she just never really fell in love with a man, and she fell.
And you're
in
still
love.
Friends on Facebook.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So when you did that thing with your girlfriend about I like you so much, but I don't say I love you. That's so juvenile, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very weird. It became such a big weight on our shoulders.
What a pain in the
like,
ass,
and
man.
I think she would have said it instantly if I said it, but would refuse to say it first.
Right.
And I just wasn't sure, so I didn't want to say it because I didn't want to like sign that contract.
Right.
If I didn't really believe in it. So it's this like cold war of, then you get to a place where every time you're doing anything remotely romantic, it's like, oh.
Here we go.
It's like
too much pressure.
Yeah, it was.
Sometimes almost in a relationship, it's easier to get married so you can get divorced than break up. You know what I mean?
That's a lot of. And this is why lawyers are rich.
No one listening should take that advice.
Now, bringing that up, you are married now.
I am married now.
And how
yes.
is this new relationship? I love her. I met her.
Yeah, it's wonderful. We've been married over a year, and yeah. it's great.
I met her at the Halloween party. She seems like a really spunky person.
She's great. She's Spanish.
Spunky. Like, she feels like beautiful. Her own person.
No,
like, very
I know.
Confident.
I just haven't heard anyone under 80 ever say, describe someone
she's
spunky
82,
before.
Actually.
No, I mean you being 80. Wait, I'm sorry. So she's. Spanish, you said?
Yeah, she's from Spain. Oh, and she's here a long time.
Super Spanish. She's ultra Spanish.
Yeah, she's actually Spanish.
Wow,
yeah.
That's pretty cool.
From Barcelona. We're going there for Christmas.
Oh, how so, lucky. Yeah, she's how wonderful. Wonderful. That's awesome.
Does she say Barcelona?
I know. And we went to college together and reunited 10 years later.
That is so sweet. Yeah. On Facebook?
The first contact was actually through OkCupid. I didn't recognize her.
Neat.
I sent her a message, she wrote me back, and she was like, oh, I know you. We went to college together. You dated this girl I had a class with, and I dated your friend Jesse.
Wow.
Who was like one of my best friends in Los Angeles.
That is so interesting. Yeah. That is so great. Sometimes when you meet up with somebody from the past like that, it's so nice because you already have a connection and can already like supersede all the crap.
Yeah, we have a lot of mutual friends, so it's like not my
friends.
Where
did you go to college? Friends.
Boston University.
BU.
So yeah, my book is sort of about dating a lot, and my wife is the happy ending.
So yeah, it sounds like you've dated a lot. So how many girlfriends is the book about?
I went through what my wife calls my slut period before I met her.
Sure.
And so I think in like almost 2 years, I went out with like over 30 women.
Wow.
To varying degrees.
How many did you sleep with?
I think I slept with like 7 or 8.
That's a 33% ratio.
Yeah.
30%?
Which is not exactly Wilt Chamberlain numbers, but it was more than I'd slept with in my entire life up to that point.
Thank you. So one other person in the world. Every time I bring up Wilt Chamberlain's 20,000 women, people stare at me like they never heard of the story.
Really?
It's like men. What are you so proud of that? Men, you guys flaunt that, like for your race. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
Not your race, but for your sex. Gender. Like about Wilt Chamberlain.
No, but again, Wilt Chamberlain supposedly slept with 20,000 women, which is 500 women a year. For 40 years or some insane amount.
Yeah.
It's like, how did you even eat?
It was actually at the end of the year, I was like, that doesn't seem like a very big number. But then I would talk to people. I think people have slept with a lot less people than you think in general. A lot of people are like, well, that's more than I've ever slept with.
Right. So. Because really, 7 or 8 women in 2 years is like one person every 3 months.
Yeah.
God, you're almost virginal, really. That's nothing.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, no, good thing you're off of Tinder.
Now listen,
or a Grindr, whichever.
You do all these different moth shows in Los Angeles, and you are the host of one of the Story Slams here in town. So let me ask you, as the host of a Story Slam like The Moth, you hear an awful lot of stories. I mean, I hear basically a story a week. You hear 10 stories a week.
Yeah.
So tell me, what is the first sign something is going horribly wrong in their story?
A lot of times people, I think from an old like public speaking edict, to start with a joke.
Oof.
And so people will start with a joke and it will fall flat and you can just tell they're like panicked.
You can't climb out of that.
Yeah, that can be very tough. And then usually, aside from that, it's when the story, you can tell the story's not really about anything. It's a thing that happened to them and it doesn't really have a point and they kind of meander. And when you're 2.5 minutes into what's supposed to be a 5-minute story, and you're like, what is this story about? I don't even know what this is about or who's in it. Or that's kind of it's a really bad sign, because when you have 5 minutes, like, you need to get to it.
And so what is the sign of a really good story in that it's going well?
For me, a really good story is someone is confident, they know their story, but it's not really polished. And it's very clearly about one thing. You know, there's and usually the shorter amount of time that passes over the course of the story, the stronger it is. So,
in other words, like a one night period or a...
Yeah, you want it to have a narrative flow as opposed to be sort of a biopic about how great your dad was. Because in 5 minutes, that means it's like a montage of...
It's so funny.
This
you
is
would
great.
Use
this
that
is great. That was great.
As an analogy, because biopics often end up being not good motion pictures because they're just like, well, here's the 5 most famous events in James Brown's life or whoever.
Yeah, the Ray Charles story.
And we have to hit...
Right.
It's not a story because it's like we have to get all this information in. Yeah.
They try to do too much in a small amount of time.
And the other mistake is on the opposite end is when people mistake an anecdote for a story. So an anecdote is an incident that happened to you that is probably mostly amusing to people that know you very well.
Right.
Or as an offhand, in-context thing. It's a story, there's change, there's momentum.
Beginning, middle,
end.
You,
the main character, if you're telling your own story, has
well, there's nothing worse
something.
Than when somebody tells a story about somebody else in terms of, like, from their mother's point of view. Or,
yeah.
You know, when my mother grew up, it's like, but wait a minute. You're not your mother, and so it's not relating to you.
I wonder, as a writer, and you're a screenwriter, you have stuff going into production, which is awesome. It's like, I had read, you know, years ago that the edict of a good screenplay is it starts at the last... Starts telling the story at the last possible moment.
Yeah.
And it gets out at the first possible moment. Do you think that applies to, like, storytelling venues where you have, like, 5 minutes?
Yeah, definitely. I've done some storytelling coaching, and a lot of times I'm just like, these first two paragraphs, like, you don't need these.
Yeah.
Get rid of these. People will catch up with who you are, especially when you're telling a story in person and people can see you and hear you. That's one thing I've had to learn as I start writing some of the stories I do on stage for my book is like, oh, they're not seeing me. They don't hear my tone. This sort of comment that I can make sound self-effacing and sarcastic in person doesn't come across on the page.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you're performing live, like, you kind of just have faith in the audience and the general vibe you put out. Like, I don't need to know where you grew up. I don't need to know all this
we
stuff
had
about
Margot
you.
Lightman on the show recently, and she wrote a book called Long Story Short, and she talks about how writing a book or writing it on the page is so different than performing it. Because performing it, walking up to the stage, they've already made 10 assumptions about you. You didn't even open your mouth, and they already know who you are.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, like I walk up and it's like people,
they know you're a bear.
It's like I said, no, they know I'm a bear. No, all I have to, I can be telling a story about, you know, the Green Bay Packers and they'll be like, yeah, that makes perfect sense. It's like that guy looks like a Packer fan. It all makes sense.
Let me ask you, but here's something that I don't like in a story. When it should be a good storyteller, and you know it's a good storyteller, and you know they're going to have a good story, when it's too polished that they almost add their own mistakes.
Yeah.
That bothers me so much. It's like, why are you pretending you don't know what you're going to say when you know exactly what you're going to say?
Yeah.
Like, they start fumbling and... what is that?
Well, I think... So it's funny, like...
Bad
acting,
usually.
There's this, like, zone of polish where... like, in robotics, they call it the uncanny valley, where a robot looks close to a human, but it's not a human, so it's creepy. Like,
yes.
We either want it to look not at all like a robot... Like a human, I mean, so it's like a cute little robot, or to look so close to a human you can't tell the difference.
I know about this from 30 Rock, because that's where I get all my scientific information. Yeah.
And so it's the same thing with polish, is there's storytellers that maybe haven't done it a lot. They have this sort of charm of they're not polished, but it's a raw, real story. And then there's people that are so good, it feels that way, but if you saw them again the next night, you'd be like, oh, like... They're just really good at this.
But if they're good at it, then it's okay. But if you're bad at it...
But when you're in that middle zone where you can see that polish, you can see where they made the polish, that's where it feels really awkward.
I think there's also a certain, I want to say arrogance, that may not be the word, but it's like, remember when comedians started to go up with their notebooks, and Gene Garofalo, the prominent example, where it's like, hey, man, I'm just talking off the top of my head. I got my notebook full of notes here. I might just tell you a couple stories you might find... It's just, they're doing the same fucking jokes they always do. They're exactly like Don Rickles or Jan Murray, but it's like they're pretending that it's all very casual.
That bothers me.
And that to me is what you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't care for that at all.
And and if you're bad at that, then it's extra insulting. It's like don't pretend you're making this shit up when you spent 5 hours.
It takes you out of the moment. You know they're bullshitting.
Yeah, it's like I'm watching you.
Sometimes
perform.
When I see certain performers concerts, the same thing happens. You know, you hear the musician make the same. If you see them on a tour and you see the same tour, now, it's not just the same music. Of course, it's going to be the same music, but they'll make the same comments. They don't even know what city they're in, and they're saying the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And then it's like, God damn it. Don't say anything if you're going to... Do you know what I mean? Like, I'd rather just not hear the... I'd rather hear the silence.
It's tough, I think, especially in storytelling compared to stand-up, where storytelling, everyone does it every day in real life. It's like how we communicate with each other. So it feels very false to repeat a story on stage.
Yeah.
Whereas if you know anything about performing, like, no one can come up with an hour of new material or a half an hour or even 10 minutes every day, every time they perform.
Right, the trick is always to make it seem like Jerry Seinfeld goes up, it sounds like he's just talking to you,
right.
Which is incredibly hard to do.
Yeah, and so I sort of had to get over that mental thing of like, I want you try and make it fresh and have energy every time you tell it, but yeah. you're going to tell
Do
a story
like
more
the
than
idea?
Once.
I mean, obviously you're a big Moth fan because you work with the Moth a lot. And I, obviously I like the Moth too. It's kind of what prompted me to do this entire podcast. But mm-hmm. one thing I don't really care for is the idea that anybody can tell a story. Mm. I mean, I think that everybody has a story, but it doesn't mean they're all really good stories.
This is the beginning of story apartheid, I think.
Sometimes at the Moth, you know, there's 10 storytellers and there's yeah. like, well, I like two of them. It's well, tricky, right?
Yeah, I think it is.
It's
I
part
mean,
of the game.
It is the good bad of the Moth, because the thing I like about the Moth is when I host, there's 10 stories. Now, because anyone can tell a story and we draw the names randomly, a lot of times, 6, maybe 7 of those stories are not that great. They're fine. They're average. But one, it's always someone, it's at least usually, it's someone that got up there and told a true thing from their life. So at the very least, you're like, there's something kind of nice about that. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a performer that's just going to go on to the next show mm-hmm. and tell the same story. Like, a lot of times it's someone who's like, I just had a great story for this night, and I really want to tell it. And maybe they're not that good at it because they're not a pro.
Yeah.
But there's something nice about that. And then occasionally, you get this story by a non-professional. Maybe yeah. the only good story they have in their life, but it's an incredible story.
Yeah.
And so I think you need to mix. I think the Moth is great because it does make it feel. It's like a very warm and fuzzy place. If ever, anyone can get up and tell a story,
yeah,
I wouldn't want every story show to be yeah. like that. And even the Moth, they have curated main stage shows. The Radio Hour is
yeah,
not
see, I'm
like
about
random.
To say something. And it's going to sound to Moth people probably like I'm just some asshole comic, but it seems to me like they should do. They should book 5 storytellers they know are going to work mm-hmm. and have 5 slots come out of the audience, because it's like. The percentage is just, I know what you mean. It's like, yeah. but it's so rare, just in real life. Imagine you go, you're like, I'm going to go to a party and I'm going to talk to strangers.
Yep.
9 out of 10 of those people, you start talking to them, you're like, I need to pretend I need to pee because I got to get out of this conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, it's awesome when somebody goes up on stage with no experience and just tells a story from the heart. But it's not a high percentage.
I think it's a fun evening out. I mean, I love yeah. going to the Moth. Ask me why I don't go to the Moth a lot, Addison.
Why don't you go to the Moth a lot?
Well, let me do the numbers for you. Okay, let's see. The Moth is either in Los Angeles on a Tuesday or Wednesday night, right?
Right.
Okay, so it's $12 an hour for a babysitter.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and that's a 4-hour commitment because I yeah. got to get to the gig. You got to be at the gig for 2 hours. You got to get home. Yeah. So that's $48.
Uh-huh.
The Moth costs about $15 to get into, and that's... You may or may not perform. So
costs
you're
$8 to get into.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
I thought it was much higher now.
If you want a reserve seat, you can pay $15.
if you don't want to reserve a seat, you may not get a seat.
Yes, you have to get there earlier. So you'd need to pay the babysitter for the
So if I already have the babysitter, I'm getting the $15 seat. Okay, so now I may or may not get on stage.
Yeah.
I may or may not even have a story for the topic that has been chosen for the night.
Right.
Now let's talk about beverages.
You need 5 beverages.
Now let's talk about a right. tip. I'm out like $180.
Well, here's what I say about the Moth. The Moth is like, it's like the Olympics. It's for non-professionals. It's for people, some of them are very good, some of them
man,
are not.
Those are big words, man.
And I think there's people that, honestly, you graduate out of doing the Moth Story Slams because
yeah.
you're professional, you know you're good at it, so it's not worth paying the money and possibly not getting up to go there. And I do think if they booked half of them, I think it would actually be less successful because through
yeah, I'm just
a pro's
that out there,
eyes,
I've forgotten
you
I
want
said
like
it
the best of the best. But the people yeah. that are there,
yeah, it's definitely
they
more
always
of an
love it, and
it's
they
an
kind of
night.
Like the idea that the yeah. person sitting next to them,
it's an amateur,
got called and was like, oh my gosh, it's my turn, and
right.
went up there and told a story, and that's kind of. And I don't use amateur to mean there's bad storytellers there. I just
yeah,
mean it
are.
In terms of like, well, there are some
no,
of those.
I'm teasing,
but like. You know, like, I don't really compete in the Moth anymore for a lot of the reasons you're saying.
Yeah.
And it feels a little weird. I host it. So if I have a really great new story.
You're
and
an excellent
great theme,
host.
But,
I think
well,
you're a great host, and Brian Finkelstein's a great host.
Oh, yeah, there.
No, it's super fun. I understand the energy yeah. in the room because it's like The Price is Right. Your name gets called. You run down. You don't play a game.
Yeah.
You tell a story.
But honestly, that's why I love hosting, is because I know I'm going to be on the stage every time I go to the Moth.
Yeah.
As opposed to someone who performs, it's very stressful. When you perform a lot and it's you're sort of a professional or semi-professional and you go and you don't know if you're going to go up and 10 times they pull a name out of the hat and you're like, is it my turn? No, it's not. Is it
and
my
you
turn?
Just
no.
spent 100. Yeah, I have been at the Moth, yeah. had my coat on, ready to leave the room, and then I get cold.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So listen.
I think the key is look never take your coat off.
Yeah, we look for people
sit by the door.
I thought so. Yeah. Combining all of this is the energy of Shotgun Story Worthy. Are you ready to play?
I'm ready to play, yes.
Music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the Storyworthy Wheel of Truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
Mom is the theme. So I just went to Maui for Thanksgiving. Because my mom retired there earlier this year. And it was very fun. And she's full of fun facts about Maui. Most of them are about how the ocean will kill you. And which beaches have the most spinal injuries and where the sharks hang out. So one day we're at a beach and she said, well, let's take a walk over to this other little beach. This nearby, it's actually called Little Beach. We were at Big Beach and there's a beach called Little Beach. So she's like, let's walk over to the Little Beach. So I'm like, okay, yeah, let's go check it out. That sounds fun. You have to kind of climb over this rock face and then you got this great view and then you climb down this little beach that you can only get to by this like short hike in. And we get there and we're walking along and I start to notice that Little Beach is not just littler than Big Beach. There's another difference. It's clothing optional at Little Beach. Which means, of course, a couple of beautiful ladies without tops on, but mostly means a lot of naked dudes. Like, that's... And not just, like, sunbathing. Like, there's naked dudes boogie boarding. There's naked dudes snorkeling. Mm-hmm. There's naked dudes laying out. And, like... So when a guy is laying... We all know what a penis and balls look like. But when a guy is laying back, and I'd never seen it really from another point of view... It's really a pile of dick. Like, that's the form it takes, is just sitting right in the middle of them is this pile of really white dick around. It's always super tan skin because these are naked people. So I was like, Mom, did you know that this was a nude beach? And she was like, oh, yeah. And I was like, oh, you're very sly about saying, oh, let's go check out
Look at that pile of dick over there.
Yeah. Well, this pile of dick beach, as it's called.
Oh, my God. That's a good story.
Thank you. That just reminds me very quickly.
Yeah.
My mom was from Germany, and she moved back there, basically retired back to Germany, which I guess is okay. But your mom retires to Maui.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah,
other people were retiring to, like, you know, Scottsdale. People are like, son of a bitch, I gotta go to Scottsdale. Anyhow, so with my ex-girlfriend, we go and we visit my mom in Germany, and they're gonna go to the spa. It's a spa town where you take the waters and you sit in the hot natural springs. And I'm like, I just want to get away from my mom. It's like, you gals go have fun. I'm gonna go over here and eat a bratwurst and just fucking pretend this isn't stressful. So they go into the thing, and my girlfriend at the time is telling me it's like kind of weird. I'm changing in front of your mom. I mean, you know, we're both women, but it's a little, you know, it's a little uncomfortable. And they're in the locker room, and she's like, I'm taking my top off in front of your mom. And a naked man walks by because it's a bisexual locker room because people sit naked in the sauna.
Sure.
So it's like a pile of dick just walks by while she's like, in the middle of this, this is weird with your mom, and there's you, me, and your mom, and a dick. It's like, just like, and my mother's from Germany, so she's like, what? What? She has, like, no, so European, no concept of our American puritanical. So anyhow, I say, good for your mom.
Well, walking down, you know, like a guy walking by nude isn't as strange as like when you see them laying on their backs on the beach, almost, you know, there's like a jellyfish and then there's a pilot.
He would like them to be lying on their on their backs, right? Yeah,
I'm just thinking I think I might be a lesbian. I think I might just change. I might just turn it around.
I have that effect on women.
No, that's what I was saying earlier. It's like you look at it and you go, I can't believe all women are not gone. You know what? I'm out of this.
Hey, listen, we gotta wrap this up, but I wanna ask you, you are into fantasy sports.
Yeah.
That seems like so counter to Madison Perry to me.
Well, when I was a kid, I was obsessed with sports. And I
all
had
sports.
Like.
Because you're from Colorado.
I followed them. I wanted to play. I got.
You're like a Broncos person.
Yeah. I didn't hit puberty until like 18, so I got cut from every high school. I wanted to be a jock, but I had like a body for book reports, that kind of deal. And so I've just always liked sports. I've Basically, when I started being the same age as the pro athletes, I became less obsessed. But fantasy is still a very fun thing.
It's probably a good way to meet men. Maybe I should join like a fantasy sports league, Hannes. Do you think I should try to fake that?
But they'd all be married. They're all trying to get away from their wives.
That's why they do fantasy.
We don't get together and do it.
I see.
Your interaction is like...
online.
Yeah, like making fun of each other in an email.
See, that's just...
We don't get together.
Is that fun for you?
Making fun of people in emails?
Yeah.
Oh, it's the best.
I see.
Yeah, guys love to insult each other. What are you talking about?
By the way, so you go to Maui, and now you're going to Spain, and like, I want to live with you.
I have a great life.
But now you have a wife.
I do,
And is there a baby coming soon, or what's happening? Next soon?
No, I mean, someday. We'll have a baby.
I'll give you one year. You heard it here first, Hans Finney.
As soon as your wife gets over the pile of dick she saw, she'll be like, okay, I'm ready.
We got to wrap this up.
Turn the lights out.
I want to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Maria Spertolozzi on sound, and of course, Sean Merrick and Heather Cooney and Roddy Swearingen. Everybody's very kind to us here. Have you noticed that, Hannes?
They are very kind. They have a coffee machine that makes coffee that I will drink because I'm not a coffee person.
I appreciate a kitchen in an office. I'll say that.
It does. It feels very nice, sort of homey, and yet... And there's like over there, there's a lamp on the table that looks like it came from your grandmother's house.
I'd also like to thank John Thomas Griffith. You know, he's the guy that wrote the theme song to Storyworthy. It's called Follow Me.
True. And I love his band, Pile of Dick. No, that's not the name of his band. Cowboy Mouth, Pile of Dick.
And
whatever.
The Californians. He has two bands. That's what these music guys do, Hannes. They spread the love.
Much like a man on the beach will spread his legs. Says, oh, see, now
it's
all
gone.
I'd
also like to thank our storyteller today who has now got me thinking about a pile of dicks for the rest of the day.
Yes.
Madison Perry, thanks for being here. Really.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And of course, on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Story Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.